is back at my hotel. I'm staying with a hostel. He spent the last few weeks, the last few months of his life, really, at the Mark Hopkins Hotel in San Francisco.
Wow, that's so eerie. Wow.
It's very eerie, and the sunset is very beautiful tonight. It's sort of overlooking the city, so...
It's kind of a poignant way to start the interview. I love that. So I wanna start with, were you working on the Veerland documentary when you first got kind of word of was that the original kind of acknowledgement of this story being something you might be able to tackle?
No, it was not. I wasn't thinking about making a movie at that point. I was really just making Diana Vreeda, and then Halston seemed... On the contrary, it didn't really, there was nothing that attracted my attention at the time. I was like, who is this guy with his sunglasses and his cigarette holder who's at Studio 54? He seemed kind of like a caricature of a fashion designer. And so initially, you know, I had like that image of Halston, which I think unfortunately a lot of people do too. And it's only much later, just like a few years ago, really 3 or 4 years ago, when Roland Ballister, who ended up being the producer of the movie, came to me and asked me to take a closer look at Halston, and you know, I was like, Halston, you mean like this Studio 54 guy? And he's like, no, but there's so much more. There, just do a little bit of reading, and I, you know, I was actually sort of eager to move on from fashion films at the time. So, but I'm still pretty diligent, and I went back and did some reading, and then I just could not shake off the story from my head. I mean, the story was just so poignant and so big. It was like a business thriller, but there was this sort of self-invention myth. It reminded me of just a lot of the films that I love, like Citizen Kane and things like that, where there was like the breath to the story and an epic quality to it that I've never really encountered in the, you know, in the fashion documentary worlds that I've explored. So that's when I really decided to do it. I was like, I have to do this. This story is just for a filmmaker's dream, you know.
I love that you brought up Citizen Kane. With Halston being such an enigma to I think so many people in I mean, definitely here in America, but even in the fashion world itself, was it the interview that you were able to get with his niece that really kind of opened the doors? Because I feel like, how did you get into his world so much? No one's ever done this before, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, Leslie Florrick was definitely instrumental in like opening the doors to the inner circle. And I think once she felt comfortable with where I was taking the movie and the portrayal of her uncle, she sort of vetted to me, and then all the models sort of, you know, were suddenly okay with being interviewed, and a lot of the, you know, a lot of the other people were involved in his office because she worked with him, she knew everyone. And then the business people, on the other hand, I mean, it's like the other side of the line, you know, it's like, there's really kind of like an enemy line. It's surprising, you know, 35 years later that it's still as vivid, but there is a sense of, you know, two sides. And so the other side didn't have anything to do with Leslie, of course. But the businessmen were also, they had their own set of concerns because they were like, well, why would we want to be part of this movie because you're just going to make us the villains? And so I had to, like, you know, convince and talk about my approach and show them that I was interested first in like a very thorough approach, but also a fair approach. And, you know, I was going to talk about both sides. For me, there wasn't a clear-cut narrative of Halston was victimized. right, the corporation, and they did everything wrong and he did everything right. That was, you know, to this day, I really don't know which side I would take if I had been in there, you know, in the trenches. That's another part of the story that attracted me, but it was very ambivalent, you know, like the best film noir. It's like no one's ever completely good or completely bad. There's many shades of gray in between, and that's what makes like compelling storytelling.
I'd love to kind of expand on that. I think your work with your cinematographer, Aaron, and mm-hmm. especially the, you guys did a lot of interesting types of, you know, there's negative images in there. I saw there's color bars. There's even, I feel yeah. like, different things that we may not have seen in your mm-hmm. previous films. What made you go that right. route?
Well, I mean, first I wanted to do the film noir. So the film noir, you know, it comes out of this sense of, like, big storytelling that I saw in the film from the beginning. And then the initial image that really drew me to, that compelled me to tell the story differently was the image of somebody in the archives having to erase the tape because the corporation has decided that they need to clear the space and sell the blank tape for $1 a pop. And I, as a filmmaker, you know, that was just that, I found that so outrageous and unbelievable and unnecessarily mean, you know. And I think a lot of things flowed out of that, you know, the idea of having a narrator, but also the idea of the tapes being kind of like what's going to take us through this story. Again, you know, like I'm a filmmaker, so that's what I do every day is pop in tapes. I mean, we don't do it with VHS tapes anymore. Now it's all on computers, but it's very much what I do. It's like I'm a camera and like an archivist. I dig through tapes and try to interpret images that have been stored in archives, and so the archivist narrator was a little bit of a doppelganger for me, and from that came the theme of images, you know, and what do images mean? What is their power? But how can they be deceiving as well? And you know, when I was editing scenes with my editor, we were gravitating towards when the nature of images themselves were questioned, you know, and so yeah, I'm glad you picked up on like negative images and you know, glitches or rewinding and different sorts of like manipulating images and showing that images are physical objects, you know, I mean, not exactly physical objects, but they're material, they're part of the material world, and they have textures, colors, and I wanted the film to sort of reflect that the images are not just stories; they're actually sort of constructed, you know, and they can be deconstructed.
Speaking of, you brought about the archivist part of the job that you know that's what you do. When you found that NBC documentary, and some of the stuff that had never been shown, mm-hmm. how much excitement did you gather from that? That must have been so fascinating.
That's the investigation part. That's when you really feel like you're in a detective story. and I love that. You know, I've never really experienced that in a film before. But the other films were much more driven by empathy, and this one was driven much more by a sense of discovery and kind of investigation. It was like, who is this guy behind the dark sunglasses? You know, I felt like I didn't really understand Hoffman in the beginning, and I was the urge was to sort of like try to get through to the different masks that he was wearing, and. So it's great when you get unfiltered, unedited footage, raw footage, you know, from like a documentary that never aired. But then you're like, oh, maybe I get a chance to discover who he was before he got his hands on images, because everything was so crafted. Everything else is world, you know. He was like the first Instagrammer, really. he was projecting this image in these very carefully curated images, and sometimes it was hard to see beyond that and see like the human being behind it. But when you get suddenly raw tapes, you could see the tension flare up. You could see, you know, how he talks to his underlings, and a lot of a brand new Halston sort of comes forward. You know.
Was there an interview that you had either side, whether it was the more fashion side of it or the business side, that you were just amazed that something they said that you didn't anticipate, maybe, you know, the business people actually not being as, I mean, they didn't come across necessarily, like you said, as cutthroat as I anticipated, and maybe the fashion mm-hmm. people, I guess, was there an interview that surprised you more than any other?
Well, I mean, the business people were, I mean, I found them as cutthroat as I expected. I mean, I was pretty blown away by some of the stuff that they were saying. And a lot of the stuff that they were saying was, like, they were using vocabulary, and it's funny, it's like from Bergdorf Goodman to the Norton Simon to the SMART people, it's like, they would talk about Halston sometimes in derogatory terms that was vaguely homophobic. There was kind of a constant threat there, whether it was saying like he was fussy or like airy fairy, like pinky throw, all of those terms sort of hinted at kind of homophobia. And I think, you know, when I try to analyze why I made this film, I think that was a big part of it. I think it's not the homophobia per se, but the way that creative people are treated by the industry. You feel very much sort of instrumentalized and looked down upon a little bit and exploited. It's something that I felt, and I think that's why it resonated with his story early on, because I've had experiences with corporations where I felt that way. And you know, when you look at the way people in the business world just envision not only Halston himself, but then his work, you know, like just deciding to sell all of his dresses, and, you know, they don't think about giving it to a museum or anything. It's just a different language. It's just a different worldview. You know?
Wow. So, I mean, would you say this film was cathartic then in some sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, like you do every film. I mean, I do every film. You know, you're going to spend like 3 years of your life at least, but it has to fulfill some kind of need. and you do it because of things that make you tick, you know. And I think the conflict, the business conflict, was definitely something that resonated with me. Whether I understood it at the time or not, maybe in the beginning I felt just like the amazing kind of like thriller type of story that was in front of me. But it became more and more apparent that, I don't want to disclose too much, but I've had experiences with corporations that were pretty traumatic.
Wow, that's terrible. I guess I'd want to ask, when diving into the people that were around him more and more, you know, maybe even like a person like Victor, I think the character Victor, can you talk about finding, I mean, that he himself was such an interesting figure in Holstrom's life. Just as someone like us that doesn't know everything about that past, what was it like being able to dive in really into more than just the fashion? I mean, we got a man's whole life before us.
Yeah, I mean, Victor, I think there's the director's cut, I don't think you've seen. I think you've seen the hour and 45 minute long version, but the director's cut has even more Victor, and that's going to be released eventually, I think, on Amazon. But the version you saw, like, we just they had to make drastic choices just to get it to a theatrical length. But Victor was one of the aspects that we decided to shrink a little bit. I mean, it was important to me to show Victor, and in the director's cut, there's even another boyfriend in it, an earlier boyfriend, a predecessor to Victor, whose name was Ed Austin, and he was black. He was working with Austin, but he was always sort of like the hidden boyfriend. So, I think I wanted to have this personal life sort of woven through it, because it was just so hard to understand, like, what was he doing with Victor? It was so odd that this crazy Venezuelan, like, provocateur was Halston's boyfriend, when Halston was so polished and so groomed and everything. So I think it's, like, when you're dealing with Halston, I think what attracted me initially was the mystery and the enigma around him. He's always very elusive, and so the approach I think that I took was to look, outside of Halston to see, like, the people that he surrounded himself with. So Victor can tell you about Halston, and then also looking at the architecture, the places that he built or that his offices would tell you about his inner life, because eventually, like, he's very elusive and mysterious. He doesn't want to talk about anything remotely analytical, introspective. So you have to look other places, and I think I looked at, when you look at his boyfriend, I mean, it's not his boyfriend of like 2 years; it's 16 years. This guy who's so unstable, but somehow Austin got a kick out of having him, around. What does that tell you about him? It's interesting. He's one of the most complex characters I've ever had to deal with.
As far as, I mean, you have such a global view of the fashion industry because of all the great work you've been able to do. For us Americans, though, I mean, like Calvin Klein, Vera Wang, people like that, Halston is still an enigma. One of the fascinating parts I found out in the film was you gave us the Midwestern version of him as well. Like, we got to see him away from New York. Mm-hmm. How instrumental was that in giving you kind of the other section of the film? I would love to know, did that help complete kind of how to tell the story? Was that you have another, the more the way into his yeah. youth?
I think it was important because he refused to talk about it much, And I think it cuts both ways, actually, because he doesn't want to talk about his roots. And you could go for the simple answer of, it's because he's got humble roots. And, he doesn't want to, now that he's constructed this image of, like, the very sophisticated designer, he doesn't want people to know that he grew up in the Depression era, in the Midwest. But at the same time, I think he's not someone who likes to dwell on anything remotely negative, or he doesn't like people to pity him for any reason. So he never wanted to play that card, like, I came from such humble backgrounds, and I'm a self-made man. I think he just wanted the work to speak for itself, and he never really played the victim. I mean, there's something very plain American, sort of, like, and very Midwestern about that, from what I understand. I mean, I'm French, so I'm seeing it also from a friend's point of view, but so, but it seems like a very straightforward way of like approaching things and just not really searching, you know, people's empathy necessarily because of your humble background, but not playing like hard and just like moving forward. To me, it was fascinating when he's, you know, I mean, again, it's like as a French person, it's like the American dream. I moved to New York like 16 years ago, and pretty much for the same reason as that. Also moved to New York probably because you want to reinvent yourself, and you know, like, I didn't make movies before. I was actually sort of at a dead end in the French system because it's hard to break into the film industry there if you're not on that track from a very young age and you're not connected. And so I just, you know, moved to New York, and in New York it wasn't a problem at all. Nobody looked at where you came from or what you had done before. It was more about like what you had to offer. And so, you know, I think it's that idea, that myth of the American dream, and the idea that you can reinvent yourself that attracted me also in that story.
Well, I've got to ask then, with the success of Dior and I and Vierland as well, this film's already, like you said earlier, you know, it's got Amazon coming up, and there's going to be a theatrical release. I mean, how exciting is it now seeing, you know, every time you kind of touch a film now, it's an important piece of material. How do you look at that?
Well, I should look at it the way you look at it, but I don't. I'm always like, this is not good enough. I need to do better. Let's be in such and such, you know, festival, or like, you know, I need to be getting to these and these outlets, and you know, I don't know. It's like I try to keep the bar very high for myself, and you know, I think that's why I try to. I try to tell stories differently each time, and I would get bored with myself otherwise. So, you know, like trying out new structures for film, thinking about film noir and documentary format, all that keeps me excited about what I'm doing, you know. So, yeah, I don't really see it as I try to take on subjects that are exciting to me and hoping that people will respond to it because I'm, you know, I'm applying kind of like this very high standard to myself, and then hopefully that means that people will, that it'll be widely sort of appealing, you know.
Well, I know we got to have you here in Dallas for Dior and I, and you're about to come out here again with this. What are your... What are your memories of Dallas? What are you looking forward to your time out here?
I love Dallas. Last time for Dior and I, it was great. And the festival director like took me around everywhere. And I just remember like a great thriving fashion scene. There was this woman. I can't remember her name now, Jan something. She was like a fashion model. She was a big fashion model. She might have modeled for Halston, for all I know. We didn't talk about it back then because I didn't know I was going to do Halston, but I think she's coming this time. I asked Anne to reach out to her again so she could do the Q&A. Very stylish, very important model of the 70s and 80s. So I was very impressed by the fashion scene in Dallas, and the warmth of everyone, you know, everyone is just so lovely.
Very cool. I would love to know, you know, I know you may want to keep some secrets about what's upcoming for you, but is there anything down the pipeline that you can share with us?
Well, I'm doing a film, I'm doing a documentary that is going to be art-related. No, it's not going to be on fashion. So I'm looking forward to that. And I've already started
I've been doing it actually concurrently to Halston. It's a very different type of project, but yeah, that's going to be cool. And then moving further into narrative film as well, I'm writing a screenplay.
Wow, that sounds very exciting. How exciting is that for you? That must be.
It's very challenging, but because I'm not a natural born writer, but I. You know, I have to write what I want to direct, so. But I have collaborators as well, so that helps.
Very cool. Well, I can't wait to see you back in Dallas, and thank you for the time tonight, Frederick. It was a pleasure.